For the meeting of the Planning Commission, the City of Rockland, dated December 20th, 2016. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner McKenzie, would you please lead us?
Please rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Gallardo?
Present.
Commissioner Martinez?
Here.
Commissioner McKenzie?
Here.
Commissioner Whitmore?
Here.
Chairman Sloan?
Here. With that, we'll move on to the minutes. Do we have any comments on the minutes from November 15th? Seeing none, we'll move on to correspondence for the Planning Commission.
Nothing other than the blue memos that were provided for the item on tonight's agenda.
Okay, thank you. At this point, we'll open the podium for citizens from who wish to address the Commission on non-agenda items. They may step forward at this time. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to consent items, which is item 7. The Louis Taylor Family Trust Property Purchase General Plan Consistency Finding.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I believe this is one of the first times we've actually had anything on the consent agenda. So unless the commissioners or someone in the public wishes to pull one of those items off the consent agenda, normally you would just move to accept the consent agenda and have a roll call vote to that effect, and that would approve all the items on that agenda.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
So I'll move to pull item 8 from the consent agenda, the West Oaks agenda item.
Do we have a second? Oh, okay. It is pulled. So we can move forward with approving item 7 then.
And I would ask if just to confirm that there's any public comment opportunities on the approval of item number 7.
Okay. Therefore, this item 7 is open to the public for comment. And seeing none. So we need to take a vote on the consent items then, which would be item number 7. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so we need a motion and a second for approval of item number 7.
I can make a motion to approve item 7 on the consent calendar.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none. And what is the action on the item that is then pulled?
It would be heard now as okay. Item number 8 for either you can ask questions or ask for a staff report.
Okay, so is there a staff report available for item number 8?
There is, if the commission would like me to present it, or if you just have questions.
I'll defer to you, Mr.
What's your
McKinney?
Pleasure?
Well, maybe we can start with questions or perhaps commentary relative to the agenda item, and then staff can respond if we need a full. I don't know that we need a full staff report, but my issue with agenda item number 8 is the West Oaks, west of Sunset, former fire station site. The plan as presented is to, at some point in time in the future, after perhaps making these findings, is to sell that site for other uses, be it housing or some other potential use. So my concerns, issues with this agenda item is this site is adjacent to the Kathy Lung Park, a park which is significantly underparked during peak events, kids' soccer tournaments, flag football, city-run flag football that occurs there, softball tournaments. It's a site which has sat vacant for a number of years, largely due, it's my understanding, to the fire station being housed on a separate location. And so in reviewing the staff report and looking at all the findings, they're mm-hmm. all land use related, and I generally don't have an issue on the surface with the findings. However, it's also a site which is zoned for recreation purposes. It sits adjacent to a park. Question for staff, has this concept gone before the Parks and Rec Commission. I could easily make findings from the conservation resource open space general plan element to study the use of the site for recreation purposes and to derive that public benefit versus selling it for some other use, which may be incompatible with the park. So I think as a commission, we need to be careful, and perhaps also for the city council, be careful on what we do with that site. I don't know the history of that site relative to how it was acquired by the city, if it came in through an IOD or whether it came in through a development agreement, or how it came to pass that that's a site that we now have that's excess property and proposing to sell it, so, or to make findings such that it may be sold in the future.
Okay, well, I can answer some of your questions. The site was acquired as part of the development and large lot subdivision of the West Oaks area for a fire station site, with the provision that it would retain with the city if it was not used for a fire station site. That's what we were able to find. The city has been actively marketing it. I have not been privy to whether or not the Parks Commission has considered this directly, but the city management has been in discussion with several different groups about purchasing this site. So my understanding is that it has been vetted in that way. And therefore, because there is not a specific buyer at this time and we don't have a specific user, we are trying to expedite the processing by having the general plan consistency finding with a variety of potential uses noted, and the understanding that it will have to come back through the system, Planning Commission and Council, for approval of whatever those land uses are proposed to be. So you will be seeing the site again before it gets developed, assuming you approve the general plan consistency.
And if I could add one additional comment, and Deanne, you might weigh in if you feel differently on this or recall differently. I believe, and I can't tell you when it was, but I believe this is a property that the city owns as well as a number of other properties throughout the city. I believe those have, at least one occasion, but perhaps more than one occasion, been presented to council and discussion at the council level about the intended disposition of these properties. I don't know that I can say affirmatively. I don't recall if they were determined to be surplus or if there was that extent of consideration, but my recollection is that there was some direction from council to dispose of the property.
And just if I can add a couple things. On this property, we did do the research on how the city acquired the property, and it was initially pursuant to a development agreement. It was later deeded to the city without restriction from the developer. So some changed circumstances when it was identified not to be a fire station, and there was a grant deed to the city without limitation. So that's the answer to that at least initial issue for acquisition by the city. In addition, as Mark indicated, at least two, perhaps three times in the last 2 to 3 years, an inventory of city properties, which are referred to as kind of as excess properties which aren't serving a public purpose, which the city does not have any intent for future development or city needs, have been identified, and the city council has authorized a marketing campaign for those properties. This is one of those properties where the city was holding the property out for offers to be sold. So this is one of the properties similar to some of that downtown former RDA properties, et cetera. So in the history of that, that has gone to council with the designation of excess surplus properties several times. I don't have all the details.
And if I can add one last comment, I also believe that there's a typical process the city would go through in terms of disposing of property, we'll say surplus property. There's a noticing requirement. My recollection is that this one has been properly noticed and sent and provided I think it's 60 days for parties to be able to provide comment, and the city did receive, I think, some comments. One was from the county asserting they had no interest in the property. I believe that's the case, not just with this property. I think there were some others that we dealt with it that way as well.
Okay. Well, as one planning commissioner with definite interests in the public benefit of this site, I can't support making the findings from a land use perspective, because I could very similarly make the findings under the recreation section that this site should be retained, or at least analyzed the same options and potential dispositions that the sale of the property could be, should be analyzed for, perhaps by the Parks and Rec Commission, for parking, for other utilization as part of the Kathy Lund Park. Maybe these discussions have occurred already at the city council level, but from my perspective, I don't support the consistency finding.
And if I could add one more comment, I apologize. I don't know that it's gone to the Park and Recs Commission. I do believe that the Public Services Department, who manages the inventory of properties and manages the operations of the parks and the capital improvements and the needs for the parks, I believe they've made a determination at the staff level that the property doesn't serve any purpose, at least from their perspective, in support of the parks. I believe that's the case. There's no formal position to that effect. I could be wrong, but I believe it's been conversations with staff, with upper management about that as well. So.
And just one additional, the city has received an offer on this property. So Kent's the catalyst for the consistency findings to support that ultimate purchase.
Do we know if the for what use that offer might be? Is it commercial? Is it multifamily?
I believe that the offer that is under consideration currently is for I'm not sure that it would qualify under high-density residential, but it's more of a townhouse type of product, I believe, is what they're considering. I couldn't tell you how many units at this time.
I may be wrong, but as I recall, if a public entity, and you mentioned you thought the county had already reviewed, if they were interested, they would have the ability to purchase it for, what, 25 cents on the dollar or something along that line. Is that still in fact?
It isn't that they can purchase it for 25 cents. The statute requires that they receive notice and you enter into reasonable negotiations. So you negotiate reasonably with those other entities. It doesn't mean that they get it discounted. That might be the ultimate deal because there's some public purpose that's being served to support the discounted amount, but that's based upon a negotiation under the statute.
But we're fairly certain then the county or our no other public entity is interested first then.
Correct.
Okay. Any other comments from the planning commissioners?
Well, I guess I would just suggest that I share some similar concerns. When I saw it, it just seems so natural to be the extension of the park area. And I have kids who participate in sports, and that parking area is packed. There's the gravel area that's unimproved that gets parked on as well. Oftentimes, and that's packed as well. And so I've had to park in the office park across the street. So whether it's an extension of active or passive use or parking, it wouldn't seem unreasonable from my perspective as well for the Planning Commission to understand better that maybe the Parks and Rec Commission has vetted it, even though the council has looked at surplus properties in general. I don't feel like I got enough of that info in the staff report or from what staff's been able to tell us now. I mean, I think there is opportunity for use. I don't know if it's in the budget but that seems to me to be the best public use from the information that I have in front of me as well. So I think I would tend to be in line with Commissioner McKenzie, at least until I understood a little bit more.
So. Staff certainly can, if you were inclined to table the item, staff would certainly be happy to bring back additional details to answer the questions that you have, including I know that there is additional land at that park that could be utilized for parking and or other purposes. I don't know if in the city CIP, if it has any intentions of addressing that long term. So those are kind of questions we could try to drill down on for you.
I agree. I don't feel like we have enough information to know that the council and or Park and Rec has had the opportunity. I'd like to make sure that they've had that opportunity first.
Brian?
I'm pretty familiar with the site.
And I will say that, generally speaking, I'm not sure that area that's on the eastern edge is really appropriate for parking. I think it's probably a little too pulled away from the rest of the site, but I am familiar with the parking issue that's out there. I don't know is that we've gone through, or I should say that we're responsible for the due diligence on the process. I think what we're being asked to do is to say, can we make the finding that it's not appropriate for a fire station, and therefore, you know, the city has the right to put this property up for sale. And so I tend to agree with staff's findings that we can let this one go, but I'll see how the rest of the commission votes.
So, Deanne, what would be our options here? It sounds like we could make a recommendation to staff to go back and look at this and have some dialogue with the Parks Commission, or we could take a vote. Is that also an option?
Yeah, either way is an option. I think I've heard that Planning Commission has some questions, and staff has offered we could bring you back more of a discussion and information regarding this property and regarding how we've gotten here and what the recommendations are. Alternatively, you know, we can move forward with this. You know, as Commissioner Whitmore said, one of the purposes of this statutory requirement is for the Planning Commission to evaluate purchases and sales of public property and make a determination whether or not that's consistent with the general plan and it's consistent with the development of the property. So it's kind of a high level, you know, is this public use, either acquisition or sale, consistent with the plan for the property? And that's the focus. And if you would like additional information, I think that's appropriate, or you can take action.
Maybe just to add to that, you know, again, being kind of familiar with that site and what's around it, its adjacent parcels and so forth, it's not like this is smack dab in the middle of, surrounded by open space or other kinds of, I'll say, park and recreation. It's adjacent to, I think, on the one side, the park, but then there are other commercial and other properties sort of to the east, I think north and also south. And so I think you could really go either way in this particular case if it was, I'll say, entirely isolated by itself with land uses around it that were consistently either open space or recreation, then I'd probably have a little bit more heartburn.
Okay. Well, I think we've got questions. We've got an offer to answer those questions. So if it's, I'll look to my fellow commissioners and kind of gauge their, I'm sorry? Okay. So at this point, we'll provide that direction to staff. Please do the
motion to continue to a future date.
You can do that. Okay. Continue to the January date.
Yeah.
Okay. And what date would that be? Do you have that in front of you? 17th?
So I'll move to continue item number 8, the January 17th, 2017 hearing, directing staff to respond to questions relative to the process and the findings that this parcel has gone through, looking from a land use general plan land use element only perspective to actually has the parks recreation, let's see, what is it, open conservation, open space, and recreation element. I know it's got multiple items within it, but if we could direct staff to at least answer the question on were the findings or was the site analyzed relative to potential uses for Parks and Rec? Has the Parks and Rec Commission analyzed this as well for surplus property that could otherwise be used for park purposes?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. We will now move on to public hearings. Item number 9. Oak Vista tentative subdivision map, SD 2015-0002, rezone Z2015-0002, Oak Tree Preservation Permit, TRE 2015-0008. And I believe we have a staff presentation.
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Nathan Anderson, City of Rockland Planning Department. As mentioned, tonight I'll be presenting one item, the Oak Vista Tentative Subdivision Map. This project includes a request for three entitlements, a tentative subdivision map, a rezone, and an oak tree preservation permit. The project site is approximately 13.3 acres, located in East Rockland. It's at the southwestern corner of Maccabee Lane and Diaz Lane. The site has historically been utilized for large lot rural residential development. Currently contains four residential homes and associated structures. These would all be demolished as part of the development of the site. The site also contains a number of native oak trees and other vegetation. I'll move on to that in a moment. The site is designated medium density residential by the general plan, but it has actually remained unclassified by the zoning map. Surrounding uses include primarily single family residential to the north, south, and west, which is the Rockland 60 subdivision. The Rockland Crossing Shopping Center is located to the west beyond in this red area, this retail commercial. Large open space area designated for recreational conservation is located to the southwest, and then to the southeast, I should say, and then to the east is the town of Loomis, and in that area, it's designated residential estate. The Rockland 60 project surrounds the property on three sides. That project was approved in November 2010, comprised of 169 single-family residential lots on approximately 57 acres. The Rockland 60 project was designed with stubbed-out streets, which was designed to accommodate for a similar project in the future, which would kind of fit into this puzzle piece. The Rockland 60 project does that. It proposes to rezone the site from unclassified to a combination of R16 and R112.5. The R16 would encompass the majority of the site, approximately 11.5 acres. The R112.5 would make up the remaining 1.75 acres adjacent to Diaz Lane. This larger area adjacent to Diaz would help buffer the small lot development on the proposed R16 from the properties located to the east in the town of Loomis. This is similar to what the Rockland 60 project did. So you can see this PD2 above larger lots to buffer those areas. The zoning areas are consistent with the medium density residential general plan designation, and also, as I stated, they're consistent with the parcel size and setbacks to the general development plan, which was established as part of Rockland 60. The PD4 is very similar in size and development standards to the R16, but the R16 is actually a zoning designation. It's not a general development plan, so it would use our current zoning standards. The proposed 63-lot tentative subdivision map would develop 59 R16 lots, ranging in size from 6,120 square feet to approximately 11,000 square feet for a few of the larger ones. And then, in addition, there would be four R112.5 lots, ranging in size from 20,050 square feet to 20,140 square feet, those all located adjacent to Diaz, as I pointed out. The internal street system would connect with the design of the Rockland 60, basically connecting north to south. Access would be provided primarily from the three points shown here. Whitehorn Drive would extend from south to north. From Black Willow Street is where it's currently located and stubbed out. You can see this photograph here connecting to the site to the north. And the street network would be accessed ultimately from Sierra College Boulevard via Shribner Way. The four R112.5 parcels, which front on Diaz Lane, would be the only lots which would access via that street. Maccabee Lane, which is shown here on the left and blown up here a little bit, would be available for emergency vehicle access only with collapsible bollards. No public vehicle access would be available connecting Diaz, Maccabee, and Whitehorn, so that emergency access only. As part of the Rockland 60 project, there were several lots which were required to be dedicated to the city to provide landscape buffers between the Rockland 60 residential development and the large lot residential parcels. Two of these lots, which are identified as Lot D, which is approximately 14,000 square feet, and Lot F, which is approximately 3,200 square feet, are shown right here. Because the Oak Vista project proposes a rezone and a development of the site, which is generally consistent with the development in density and size of the Rockland 60 development, the landscape area is not necessarily required anymore to provide that buffering between two uses, which were originally not quite the same. So therefore, as part of this project, the Oak Vista project is proposing to incorporate Lot D and Lot F into the project design. So these figures show the Lot D and Lot F, on the left-hand side is the Rockland 60 design, the way those were. The existing conditions are here in an aerial photograph showing how they kind of look now. And then the proposed design of this project showing the incorporation is here. One of the big reasons why this would be done to incorporate is it really helps with the circulation of the site. The Lot F, which is currently here, is a landscape strip which would preclude the access to these six parcels here as they are on the west side of Silver Lupin. So it really just kind of adds the consistency and the ability to access those properties. There's a number of oak trees on the site, as I pointed out, 420 of them to be exact. 269 of these oak trees have been proposed for removal as part of the development. Of this number, 57 of the trees have been identified as dead, dying, or a hazard by the arborist. The project has been conditioned to comply with the city's oak tree preservation ordinance in order to mitigate for the removal of the trees in accordance with Section 1777080 of the code. The mitigation will be required based on the size and health of the trees prior to issuance of any improvement plans or grading permits. So that's how those would be mitigated for. An initial study, mitigated neg deck, was prepared for the project. It determined there could be possible impacts to air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, and hazards. However, through incorporation of several mitigation measures, all potential impacts would be reduced to a level of less than significance. One of these that warrants a little bit of discussion is potential for cultural impacts. There's a requirement that, as one of the mitigation measures, prior to issuance of improvement plans and prior to any grading or construction activities, the United Auburn Indian Community, the project applicant, developer, and the city of Rockland shall enter into a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, regarding the treatment and disposition of identified cultural resources. So the city council needs to authorize the city manager to execute this MOU, so it's included in your packet as part of the project tonight. Finally, as a recommendation, the project complies with all the requirements of the municipal code and is consistent with the general plan. The proposed zoning districts are consistent with the medium-density residential, and the sizes of the lots are consistent with those zoning districts. Therefore, staff recommends the Planning Commission recommend approval of the project to the City Council. It's just a recommending body tonight. Ultimately, the project has to go to Council for approval. And happy to answer any questions. Oh, I'm sorry. There are two blue memos tonight. One deals with environmental issues, and David Mullenbrook can explain that if you guys would like. And the other it deals with one of the conditions, a modification of one of the conditions of approval, 11.B, dealing with the transfer of those lots, D and F, between the previous holder of those properties, Taylor Morrison, and the current project applicant.
Okay. With that, we'll have questions, but I'm sure that the team would like to hear a summary of the blue memos, please. In particular, the one regarding the environmental document.
Good evening, David Mullenbrook with Public Services Department. The blue memo regarding the environmental document contains two letters that were received by the city as a result of the environmental document being reviewed by several state agencies. The comments received were from the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. The Regional Water Quality Control Board's letter is generally a form letter. It's the same letter that was received when the project was referred out. It summarizes that agency's jurisdictional responsibility, their procedures and process for permitting, if permitting is necessary, through that agency, and their requirements with respect to enforcement of the Federal Clean Water Act. There is no reference within their letter to any of the analysis contained within the initial study mitigated negative declaration, and therefore the letter does not impact the conclusions reached in the initial study mitigated negative declaration. The second letter from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife took issue with some of the approaches used in the biological resources discussion, specifically as to how the resources were scoped, whether or not there was jurisdiction by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife with respect to Section 1600, otherwise known as the Streambed Alteration Agreement portion of the Fish and Game Code. So we've evaluated their comments, provided some responses with respect to what we essentially agree to disagree with some of their comments, and in other cases, we acknowledge that our mitigation measure for impacts to wetland resources could be bettered by including an acknowledgement that, if necessary, the project should require obtaining a stream bed alteration agreement through the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So incorporated in the blue memo is a resolution that acknowledges that there's a mitigation measure that has been improved by the addition of the new language, and we would ask that the commission, if they choose to go forward with this project, acknowledge that supplemental or that amended resolution. That's a summary, if you will, of the two letters. If there are specific questions regarding the points within the letters or the responses provided thereto, I'd be happy to elaborate further.
Do we have any further questions on the blue memo regarding the environmental document?
I do have a question regarding the environmental document. Sorry, not the blue memo. Just the oak tree, or maybe just with respect to the oak tree, the attachments that we have, you know, are labeled oak tree preservation plan, and they identify the various oak trees throughout the site. Are they the ones that are intended to remain? They're in between lots, like in the rear yards for the most part, or on the large lots on Diaz. I mean, are those intended to remain? Like on the ones on Diaz, you know, you couldn't build a house. Maybe I'm just reading it wrong, but...
Well, the ones that are intended to be removed have an X through them. The ones intended to remain typically just have a circle with no X. So if, for example, you turn to packet page 182,
right,
and you look at, for example, lot 60, there are several little X's that you can see there. Those are the trees that are intended to be removed. And then along the northern area, those are the trees that are intended to remain.
So like on page 183, the ones on lots 1 through 4, well, let's look at lot 2 and 3. I mean, you couldn't build a home on those lots if those are intended to remain.
Well, those are very large lots. It could be possible, but no development is intended at this time on those lots.
You are correct, though, that at such time as those lots are developed, there will be tree removal associated with the home construction. But at this time, we don't know what that would entail, and they're not proposing to remove any trees at this time. So
would it be like what we did in Whitney Oaks or something? When a plot plan comes in, we evaluate, the home, the driveway, et cetera, and look for opportunities to save at least the best trees?
Correct, and we would not normally issue an oak tree removal permit for those lots until the building permit was ready to be issued as well.
Okay.
So that someone didn't come in and clear trees in anticipation of development, then for whatever reason not build, sell the lot, and you have a cycle where the trees continually get thinned out because development plans change. So
right.
That's our typical practice on these kind of lots, is to issue the oak tree removal in concert with the actual building permit for the home.
And the same would be true for the smaller lots. I mean, what you have is kind of a fit list, almost pre-plot plan, but they're just showing a building envelope with driveway and, you know, a home. But, again, you would implement the permit at time of the
actual with the building. Smaller lots, because of the mass grading required to make the building pad, most of those trees will be removed with the initial improvement plans, except for the ones that are shown to be remained that are on the perimeters where the grading is not significant.
Okay. So getting back to like page 182 or 81, there's a lot of trees that are shown to be kind of in between, in the rear yards of homes or lots. if they're all going to be mass graded, you know, the whole subdivision, then it's – it just – it wasn't clear. It seemed to me – and what I'm hearing from you is, at least on the smaller lots, once the improvement plans come in, they're going to grade out and pad out all the lots, and those trees, we shouldn't expect them to be preserved, most likely.
The ones that are shown to be preserved will be fenced and preserved.
Okay.
But the others, the majority of them, as shown, will be removed.
Okay.
So that begs the question, sir. Are you telling us that the NEG deck analyzed those trees to be saved, but they may be removed in the future? That's what I'm hearing.
Well, as with any development, the owner, property owners, ultimate property owners have the right to remove oak trees. So, yes, the environmental document analyzed the proposed removal of trees at this time.
I think there might be some confusion. It's and I may be wrong. Maybe difficult to see on these on page 181, 82, 183 which trees are going to be removed. They're very faint. I don't know if you guys caught that, and those were all being removed. It is my understanding the darker ink ones, the circle ones in the backyards, are staying, and the approval of this project would be for those trees to stay. They would not be removed by the developer, and they are not a mitigation condition. You know, they are not being mitigated for because they're remaining.
Okay.
I think the question, if I understand it correctly, predominantly with those four lots that are sort of, I'll say, larger or less dense than the other lots, and I think I understand what the developer's trying to do in terms of saying, you know, those are more of a custom lot approach, so therefore we're not sure exactly what trees are going to be removed until someone purchases that lot and ultimately something's built there. It's not a traditional, I'll say, cookie-cutter suburban neighborhood in that regard. The others is pretty well defined because we can identify the density, and therefore, you know, with the, at least the footprints that are shown, there's an attempt to sort of identify trees that could remain because they're outside of the footprint of either streets, sidewalks, driveways, and or, you know, where the most likely occurrence of the home is going to be. I think to your point, Greg, the it sounds like there is a little bit of confusion because it suggests that those trees could all remain, but the reality is if someone's going to purchase those lots, some of those trees are going to come down. My question is that under a different permit than what we're being asked to look at tonight? And if so, is that still a concern?
That would be under a different permit issued at the time the building permits were applied for those lots.
Okay. And is that something that comes through Planning Commission or is that?
No, that's administrative.
But they're still required to pay the same fees in compliance with the...
They were required to mitigate for the removal of oak trees, yes.
And again, it's not really a wishy-washy type of process. I mean, they have to come in and there's review of their request. And the trees that can be saved typically are saved. If we can't save a tree or this is years later and the tree now is dead or diseased and it wasn't when this was approved, that's a consideration. But staff doesn't typically just say, clear out whatever trees you want. We try to keep it consistent as much as we can with what's been approved.
So perhaps another question for the trees that will be saved. Assuming they will be saved, what conditions, mitigations do we have to rely upon such that those trees won't in the future somehow be affected, be it by grading, be it by irrigation, loss of those oaks that perhaps aren't analyzed? We're in the mitigated NEG deck, we're saying these trees will be saved, and therefore, how are they being saved? What conditions can we fall back upon? Are we bonding for those trees? I don't see that as a mitigation or a condition in the project.
The condition within the resolution that's derived from the mitigated negative declaration speaks to the protection of trees not scheduled for removal consistent with the requirements of the city's oak tree ordinance. Generally speaking, the trees that are identified to be preserved will be fenced with Orange Construction fencing. Those fencing layouts and plans will have to be shown on construction documents so that we have a level of surety that the trees not scheduled for removal will be protected from construction activities.
And correct me, staff, if I'm wrong, but this is no different than any other project approach that we typically bring to the Planning Commission. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Any further questions for staff at this time?
Yeah, I'll just cut right to the chase. We have a letter that's been submitted into the record from outside counsel representing an adjacent property owner. We have a blue memo addressing that issue. It's not been presented in so much as how we treat that letter that's in the record for public purposes. So, city attorney, staff, how do we move forward given that that record has been, or the letter has been submitted into the record for both the City Council and the Planning Commission?
It's my understanding that the objections have been addressed or are being addressed. I don't have all that information. Staff does. It's my understanding the representatives are here and that the recommended 11B addresses their concerns. So it's my understanding that those objections have been resolved or can be resolved. So.
Okay. Maybe I'll go back to the original blue memo staff analysis of CDFW's comment letter. Given my day job, I receive those on projects consistently. This is something that's somewhat new for CDFW. They've maybe over the course of 10 years been somewhat quiet with respect to individual projects, but as of late, both county, City of Rockland, City of Roseville, I'm assuming others have been receiving very similar letters. Does the proposed amendment to the mitigation address their concerns for deferral of mitigation, address their concerns for representing what may or may not be their jurisdiction? I'm very familiar with this issue and have yet to find a good way to address it in my day-to-day job, so thank you for trying to take it on head-on in this case. It's probably an item for kind of higher-level policy discussions between cities, counties around the region and CDFW with what their end game is here, but interested in just if we've gone far enough from Mr. Mullenbrook's perspective to cover it from a mitigation perspective.
Sure. Let me respond to that. As you note, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has not interjected itself into much of the city's business over recent times, and it's with the arrival of a new staff person where this person has been assigned to Placer County and is now asserting themselves much more than traditionally done so by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That being said, there are discussions that I've had with consultants as well as other jurisdictions that perhaps the nature of the comments are a little bit overreaching in terms of what the comments say the department's jurisdiction is versus what it truly is. In terms of responding to the specific comments, the first comment questioned the methodology of scoping the potential for special status species, both plant and animal, on the project site and the biological resource assessment that was conducted for the project followed the process and the recommendations that the Department of Fish and Wildlife outlined in their letter. The initial study mitigated neg deck incorporated that study by reference but did not give a verbatim story of the process that was used to scope out the potential wildlife species that or special status species that have the possibility of occurring on the site. With respect to the Department of Fish and Wildlife's jurisdiction for riparian resources and habitat under Fish and Game Code. We have amended the mitigation measures I noted previously, and we believe that with that provision, that that will address the department's concerns with respect to that particular issue. Regarding deferred mitigation, we identify the issue that the department is bringing up is that our mitigation measure says to go out and the project is required to go out and obtain a Army Corps of Engineers permit for potential impacts to wetlands, and it is my opinion, staff's opinion, that that does not constitute deferral of a mitigation. The city does not have jurisdiction or regulatory authority over wetlands. Those are those duties are specifically charged to the Corps of Engineers under the Clean Water Act, and it is through the permitting process identified in that act that proper mitigation is established. So the mitigation, again, states to go out and obtain the Corps permit and then to comply with all the terms and conditions of said permit. The department raises a question about whether there's any certainty provided that the project will, in fact, be able to obtain a permit. The point being made in response to that is that our experience has been that we have not had any projects within the city of Rockland who have not been able to obtain wetlands permits from the Corps of Engineers when necessary, and that the condition is written in such a way that any unforeseen circumstance that the project is not able to obtain a permit, they would not be able to comply with conditions of approval and the project could not move forward. So there's some safeguards built in there that we feel are adequate and address the concerns enumerated by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Lastly, the Department of Fish and Wildlife comment had some suggestions with respect to how we go about mitigating for pre-construction surveys for nesting birds and raptors. We received comments about a year ago on another environmental document from the Department of Fish and Wildlife with the very same suggestions. We, at the time, modified our standard condition language to incorporate some of their suggestions, but not all, and we believe the portions that were incorporated provide a better mitigation measure, address the majority of the department's concerns, at least those that we felt were reasonable. So that's the specific summary of the concerns and responses as provided by staff.
Okay, thank you. I tend to agree with the way you've amended the mitigation measure, basically including their 1600 permit, much as you would include a requirement to go to the Army Corps of Engineers without trying to define their jurisdiction. That seems to be the point they raise consistently with this project, as well as, you know, hey, you're not including our jurisdiction. Well, okay, what is your jurisdiction? How far does that extend? It's gone beyond what historically has been defined as their jurisdiction. The Corps has been fairly well vetted over the course of time, so that I think that that works well. And I also think, you know, from the general legal concept that federal, state and federal regulations have mitigating effects. They have permit requirements, which then include in and of themselves mitigation requirements. So I think we're probably on fairly safe ground here with respect to the department. But, yeah, they're challenging, to say the least, at the moment. So hopefully we'll all figure out a way to work with them going forward.
Indeed.
Any other questions for staff? You know, I will say that this is a lot of information to absorb just prior to the meeting, and I know you've done an excellent job summarizing this, David, so thank you. But just speaking as one commissioner, it's 20 pages of information that we have very little time to go through, so just an observation and comment. So seeing no further questions, we'll invite the applicant forward at this time.
Do you guys have any questions or concerns?
Well, I think this is an opportunity for you to present your perspective on the project and I guess share whatever additional information you'd like to share relative to the staff report.
Well, we feel the staff did a great job presenting. That's what we're trying to do is develop the land. It seems like it's consistent with the general plan and how the development, the Rockland 60, developed it in such a way to be able to incorporate the land that was there. So we're content with what the staff did, and I don't know if you guys have any questions.
I apologize, but could you introduce yourself?
Sorry, I'm Ryan Bradford, representing Plaster Partners, LLC, who's the owner of the land. And we're working with the city to get the entitlements done.
Okay, any questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, at this time we'd like to invite the public forward.
Good evening, Chairman Sloan, members of the commission, Jay Pollock representing Taylor Morrison Homes. We're the adjoining property owner of the Rockland 60 development. We submitted the letter that's in the record on the project and the initial study. We've reached conceptual agreement with the property owner and developer of Oak Vista regarding the transfer of lots DNF. We're in agreement with the condition that's the blue sheet from staff regarding the change to the language, requiring that to resolve itself. We look forward to working the issues out with the Oak Vista folks between now and the city council meeting and appreciate your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public would like to speak on this issue? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the Planning Commission for deliberation.
So maybe a question for the city attorney or perhaps staff with the blue memo. So as I read this, if consensus can't be reached or agreement can't be reached, part of this project moving forward with its full approvals, the city council, or perhaps afterwards, as it's worded here. So this memo is basically saying this project would have to come back to the Planning Commission at some point in time in the future. A redesigned project would need to come back because those lots, DNF, would be contested and therefore require new analysis. What's the future of this look like if they can't reach consensus, I guess is my question.
So the subdivision map that's before you envisions subdividing and incorporation of lots DNF. The condition of approval states there has to be some type of an agreement regarding ownerships of lost DNF in the subdivider's name. The details aren't specified. So the conclusion is that the subdivider has to have ownership of DNF for it to move forward. In the event that does not occur, then this map cannot be finaled or move forward because it includes the mapping of those lots. So, you know, the subdivider would need to come back with a new proposed map for consideration by the council with a different configuration that does not include lots DNF.
So as I understand it, kind of where we're at currently, an IOD from the Rockland 60 subdivision has been provided to the city. City has not yet accepted that real property.
Factually, the IOD was offered for lots DNF, and the city has accepted that dedication at the city council meeting on November 29th, and it has been recorded. Okay. So factually, the city has recorded deed and ownership of lots DNF.
Okay. Maybe the other thing I might add, if this commission were to, or if ultimately this project were to be approved as proposed, the zoning change, irrespective of the map, and I'm not necessarily saying that the zoning's inappropriate as proposed, but you have a zoning change made where it's just a little odd or awkward to have the zoning change on a map that may not ultimately be able to be approved. So, I mean, I'm just bringing in the zoning and general plan. There's no general plan, just the zoning change.
Correct. Just the zoning. And the zoning, as Nate pointed out, is generally consistent and very similar to the zoning of the adjacent Rockland 60 project. So the anticipation is that whatever map came forward, if this one for whatever reason didn't get approved and constructed, would utilize that zoning, or they would have to apply for a change.
Right.
But the zoning is consistent with the surrounding development, and the city would, in all likelihood, for any project on the site, be looking for very similar zoning standards.
Understood. Okay.
Who would like to start conversation?
So having spent some time kind of taking a look at the map and the way this is laid out, I mean, I find, generally speaking, it's consistent with the findings that we have identified, both environmentally and otherwise. You know, you sort of think about this area, this land, and what else you can configure it or how else you can configure it differently, and it's not likely that that's going to be the case based on the way that the streets are laid out. And the fact that it's sort of isolated on all sides with the residential units that are already built, the Taylor Morrison development. So generally, I'm supportive of this project. I think I appreciate, first of all, the fact that this isn't just simply a mass grading, that we tried to at least identify some clusters of native oak trees, because it is a pretty, I'll say, native environment there. You can see just based on the aerial, we've got a number of different native species of trees in and amongst that region. I think the discussion that happened earlier about whether or not we can ensure the preservation of those trees long term is kind of difficult, I think, unless we dedicate those areas, those clusters of trees, to open space. And I'm not sure either the developer or we're even at a point where that's easy to do, you know, without a wholesale sort of redesign or redevelopment of the street alignments and the lots and those kinds of things, which I'm sure would net less lots and probably not be as attractive to the developer moving forward. So generally, I'm appreciative of the fact that we've identified some trees, that there'll be the mitigation measures necessary to identify the preservation of those trees during construction, and then I think it's really going to be up to the homeowners on those lots to carry forth that preservation, if you will. We're probably likely to see some degradation of the trees associated with those Dias Lane properties, but hopefully, again, the majority of those trees can remain. So with that, I'm supportive.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree. Short of, I had raised the first, I think, question about the oak trees. I think it would be nice to dedicate a space. I think sometimes in other subdivisions where it's kind of in areas that maybe aren't real usable or topographically it's difficult to squeeze in a lot or what have you, it might make a good spot for a cluster of trees to be preserved and in some kind of open space or something. But here it doesn't look like maybe there's not all that many opportunities without impacting the whole subdivision, as was noted. So with that and with the surrounding development, I think this is, you know, definitely compatible with the surrounding development. Also, I was around before when there was an expression of interest along Dias Lane and what those lots would look like. And so this is just, again, consistent with the prior Rockland 60 map. So with all that, I think all the findings as suggested by staff can be made, and I'd recommend that we, or I can support the request as proposed.
So I'll take my opportunity here. So I was on the Planning Commission way back when the Rockland 60 project, I don't know if it was of that same name, but it came forward to the Planning Commission. I think I can probably either take credit or what have you, whatever the right term is, for looking at that oak reserve that ended up down there as mitigation and, you know, some appeals with the then property owner to do something a little bit more with respect to oak mitigation and saving some trees, which I think what occurred there from that adjacent property worked well, mitigated for the effect, you know, in addition to the removals plus the addition of the reserve that's now there. Do I think in this case that from one planning commissioner's perspective we have an issue with the treatment of oak trees in this mitigated neg deck? I do. I think we've analyzed a project for effects which is fairly black and white. 420 trees on site, 269 are to be removed. A small percentage of those are dead or dying, which is fine, but it's not analyzing the fact that future trees may be taken out. So the mitigation, from my perspective, is not sufficient. It creates a problem for me in the record, and I don't support the project because of it. I think, and we'll thank staff and the city attorney and both sides for working through the what I'll call a real property issue or the IOD issue with the improvements that occurred on that site. Historically, it's, I think, just a circumstance of timing and improvements that were for good reason, but how those ultimately came to pass during a time frame when that project is still building. It's unfortunate. It is what it is. I think it's just really a timing issue. So thank you to all sides for working through that. And I think the condition works, but I continue to have an issue with the treatment of oak trees with respect to the mitigated negative declaration in this case.
Come up. I do believe the project's compatible with the area, and it's appropriate. I do appreciate also the comments on the blue memo, and I will tell you it's probably because I'm someone who's learning the process, especially on this November 22nd email. I would like to have a little more advance notice with that size or volume of a packet to make sure that I'm being as thorough as I can. But that being said, I do support the project.
Okay, so I have a question, and may or may not be related, just really quickly here. What is the status of the funds that are collected as part of the oak tree mitigation process? Have we had any purchases recently of properties? I know we were looking at some property down there by the river, so I'm just curious what the status of those purchases are, or if we have any money in that fund.
As you're aware, and to summarize, when oak tree removals are removed by a development project, the developer is presented with a myriad of mitigation options, whether that's preserving trees on site, planting trees on site, dedicating land that contains oak trees to the city. More often than not, though, the developers take the route of contributing to the oak trees mitigation fund. That fund... The city has been criticized in years past by tree preservation groups regarding that fund, and so there's been more attention and more movement towards actually utilizing that fund for tree preservation acquisition purposes. Most recently, the example that I would provide is adjacent to Quarry Park here. The city purchased what's known as the Kesty property. That included a number of oak trees, and those oak trees are have been incorporated into Quarry Park as in a natural state. I know there are other properties under consideration, but to my knowledge, the purchase of those properties is not moving forward at this time.
I would add that there is a fund balance. I believe it's approximately 1.2, maybe slightly more than 1.2 million, maybe slightly more than that. I do agree with Mr. Mullenbrook that there are conversations occurring. I do expect or suspect that next year you may see some proposals coming forward for the use of those funds.
I have one comment, and maybe David, you can help me out if I'm characterizing it wrong, but if the neg deck said 200 and some odd trees are intended to be preserved, regardless of the mitigation measures that the applicant has to comply with the oak tree mitigation ordinance. So I don't recall if the mitigated neg or the neg decks, you know, mitigated neg deck contemplated the potential for additional trees to be perhaps, you know, removed for the reasons that we brought up earlier in this meeting. But whether it did or didn't, the conclusion was that there's no significant impact because they're going to be complying with the ordinance. I mean, is that?
No, that is correct. There is some redundancy, if you will, between the mitigation measure that says to comply with the city's oak tree ordinance and the fact that projects, even without a mitigation measure, are required to comply with the city's oak tree preservation ordinance. The project as presented did not propose removal of the trees on those larger lots adjacent to Diaz Lane, as was discussed previously, but as recognized by the commission, development of homes on those lots would trigger ultimately the need for some tree removal. Without speculating as to which trees would be removed, and because the proposed project is not suggesting any trees be removed at this time, we did not incorporate or account for any of those trees in those locations to be part of the numerical tally that was identified both within the staff report and the environmental document. But as you correctly pointed out, ultimately the tree removal, and as discussed previously, through the building permit process, once a house plan is submitted for the development of those lots, it would be at that point in time that the developer of that particular home or those homes as a group would be required to comply with the mitigation requirements of the oak tree ordinance, the same way that this project is being required to comply with those requirements.
I just have maybe one more question. I think maybe some of the concern that Commissioner McKenzie has brought up, I alluded to when I spoke about sort of the assurances associated with these trees if the mitigated neg deck is suggesting that these trees are staying, but there's the possibility that they may go in the future because of, you know, the homeowners that ultimately own these parcels. My question is there anything that city staff could offer in terms of either a condition of approval or some other mitigation that would suggest that there has to be some other circumstances, extenuating circumstances, that would permit the removal of those trees by those lot owners in the future? Has that been something that's been contemplated in other developments, or are hands sort of tied with respect to any conditions placed upon this development?
In some developments in the past, when the city had somewhat different development processes, and in design review areas, there were more specific criteria that helped try to provide some guidelines for preserving trees more effectively. Those had mixed success. Where you run into the issue is you have private homeowners who want to use their lot as they see fit, and the city telling them you can't. Mm-hmm. And there's a tension there that is always in the balance and that we are always struggling to maintain. So at this time, in this particular development, because it is not a design review area, and we don't really have the tools to provide additional restrictions on the elimination of oak trees, and as I noted previously, they've been somewhat problematic in enforcement and their success in the past. Our best tool that we have found is not allowing trees to be removed until a building permit is ready to be issued so that we don't get speculative removal of trees.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
So is it reasonable to ask that these – I mean, do these parcels have the density of trees that would make it reasonable for the city to consider them as oak tree preservation parcels, if you will, for purchase? I mean, is that something that we can ask the city to explore, or is that outside the purview of that program, I guess?
So certainly I would welcome comments from Mr. Mullenbrook or others. The city, I think, I don't know that the city has adopted a specific form of policy with regards to how it is required to go about looking at use of that fund balance to acquire trees. Mr. Mullenbrook gave you an example just recently where the city acquired in the downtown area because I think the city's preference, generally speaking, and what might come forward in the future from staff would be either areas that are very unique in nature for various reasons. It could be the concentration, the type of trees, so on and so forth, the geography or the topography, rather. But I think the city's probably not, staff's probably not likely to recommend very small onesies and twosies. Go in and just pick out this little piece here. I think the city's staff's preference would probably be, in terms of its recommendations, unique areas. And so, as I mentioned to you a second ago, in next year, there'll probably be some recommendations coming forward. I suspect those recommendations will be consistent with the comments I just shared.
And I would just add that, I concur with what Mr. Mundell said, but also there have been studies made with respect to areas that could potentially be purchased with oak tree mitigation funds, and some of that criteria includes not only access but ability to irrigate, because not only are those areas looked at as being preserved in an existing condition, but they're also being looked at as opportunities for additional oak tree plantings. And so you have to take a look at sites that lend themselves to those abilities to provide irrigation, but also be easily accessed and maintained. Many of those sites that are recommended for consideration of acquisition are sites that are challenged from a development perspective because they have floodplain issues or they have topographical issues. They're high and low, and so they're sites that are difficult to develop in a traditional way, and that might otherwise be better suited as preserve land, despite the fact that they may have land use and zoning designations for development opportunities. So I would just add that to the discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree with staff. You know, in this case, we've had mixed success throughout the city. Whitney Oaks, perfect example of areas that have been preserved, which are functioning really well. I live in Whitney Oaks, and there are areas that do work functionally well as oak tree reserves. However, we have mitigation plantings in there we've had mixed success with over the years. You plant a certain size oak tree and you look at it wrong and it keels over versus, you know, some natural regeneration that can be counted on once you take the cows off. Oak trees tend to regenerate more successfully than planting them unless you've got a very long-term maintenance plan for those, which is prohibitively expensive. So, you know, just in terms of the way you look at mitigation and the placement of those dollars going forward, you know, something to consider. You know, my issue in this case is not so much the project. The project has a pretty good percentage of oak tree preservation assigned to it through the project description and the mitigation which is being provided. It's the analysis that's the problem. The analysis saying these trees are going to be preserved. What I'm hearing is those trees may not be preserved, so that creates a hole, and my concern is not the project. It's, you know, a defensible CEQA document for the city of Rockland. And so, you know, in this case, I'm, you know, not going to support the findings for the project because of that. And so, you know, we'll take that for what it is.
Okay, very good. So I've reviewed the staff report, plans, and environmental document, and I find that the ISMND is the appropriate document for the project and agree with the identified findings. I believe the conditions of approval provide adequate safeguards to ensure the concerns of the Regional Water Quality Control Board and DFW are addressed, and I find the project is consistent with surrounding uses and appropriately buffers the large lots in the town of Loomis. I'm sure the staff will look closely at opportunities to protect trees on the remaining lots that Commissioner McKenzie has raised as concerns. So with that, I support the project. So I will entertain a motion.
With that motion, whoever makes it, make sure you pick up staff's revisions to the mitigation measures.
And I might add the amended resolution for the environmental document.
Do we want to take these one by one or all together?
I would request that you do the environmental first and then the second. Thank you.
Okay. I will move a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending approval of a mitigated negative declaration of environmental impacts and noting the blue memo, which provides edits to the environmental impact report.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed?
No. Or yes as opposed.
The motion passes.
Okay, I will move a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending approval of an ordinance rezoning an area from unclassified U to a combination of residential 6,000 square foot net minimum lot size R16 and residential 12,000 square foot net minimum lot size R1-12.5 Oak Vista subdivision Z2015-0002. And at what point would you like me to recognize the memo regarding the proposed modifications to condition 11B?
With the tentative map.
With the tentative map. Okay, thank you.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
And then finally, I will move a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending approval of a tentative subdivision map and an oak tree preservation plan permit, Oak Vista Subdivision SD 2015-0002, TRE 2015-0008. And note for the record that this includes the blue memo with regard to proposed modifications to condition 11B.
And I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed?
Aye.
So item 8, I'm sorry, 9, passes. Thank you. So at this point, we will move on to non-public hearing items, and we'll start item 10. There are no informational items and presentations according to the agenda. So we'll move on to item 11, reports and discussion items from planning commissioners. Seeing none, we'll move on to item 12, reports from city staff.
I have none.
Okay. So I will ask really quickly, maybe Terry, you know, is there a meeting planned for the Architectural Review Committee?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Is there a meeting planned, a first meeting scheduled for the?
So two things. Not yet. There's not a meeting scheduled, but the city council is set to select appointments for a number of different boards and positions.
Okay.
And
gotcha.
The appointment to that committee will occur. I believe it's the first meeting in January. And a couple of you submitted, I think.
Yeah, January 10th is when those selection will be made for approvals.
And staff's hope is the first business will be to set the meeting times and dates that will work with the members. But we do intend to schedule a meeting fairly soon because we do have a few projects that we want to share with you. We've received good input from developers so far about the idea and the approach, so we're anxious to show you that. I also wanted to mention that there's going to be a City Council strategic planning session on January 27th.
It's a Friday.
Friday at, is it 8:30 to 12:30? Does that sound right?
Is it 8 or 8:30?
Yes, so just wanted you to be aware of that.
27th?
I believe so.
I'm sorry, you said 8:30?
I want to say it was 8:30 to 12:30 is what I recall, but I don't know that I have it on my calendar. Let's see.
8 to 12, 8:30 to 12:30.
Friday the 27th. Yeah, I don't have it on my calendar yet. 8:30.
It's back to the architecture review committee, design review committee, whatever we're calling it these days. Are those appointments, or are those functioning much as the 2x2 committee has functioned in the past with nominations at a planning commission level, or are those actually appointed by the city council?
They're appointments. The mayor recommends the city council, and city council makes the appointment both for city council and the planning commission.
Are you requiring applications for those? Because we're the candidates sitting.
You're interested? Let us know.
And I'll just state for my fellow commissioners, my interest, I have interest in it, but it depends upon my schedule. If it happens to be every other Friday when I'm supposed to be taking the day off, but I never do, I might be able to fit that in. If it's some other time, I'm probably not going to be able to make that. So.
Yeah, I've kind of mentioned the same thing. It's difficult. I think you mentioned maybe you'll do it during the lunch hour, and I'm close enough that I can maybe come in, but it will be difficult. We talked about possibly twice a month. That may be difficult.
Well, I would suggest if you have an interest, put your name in a hat, and you could always drop out if we can't fit the schedule to your needs.
Thank you. So with no other reports from city staff, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.